Hey!
Are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. This call.
OTR.
Time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Now, here is your guide to the adventures of the mind. Hey, everyone. This is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Fibber McGee and Molly. This episode is from October 30th. 1945. The episode is entitled Fibber the Sculptor. Well, the little scamps over on NBC, that funny couple, Fibber McGee and Molly, didn't bother to tell anyone on last week's episode that they were going to Canada for a Victory Bond Drive. Let me get that right. And here's the deal for the people in the audience who from Canada who wanted to see the live episode of Fibber McGee and Molly had to buy a war they had to buy a victory bond before they could get in to see the show. Now, I don't think that they could buy the bond before entering a theater because that took a lot of paperwork and a lot of bonds and people handling the bonds to sell them on site. There might have been maybe a side table or something where people could buy a $3 victory bond because that's where the bonds started at a $3 increment. So if you buy a $3 war bond, by the time it matured, it was $4. Not exactly a great return, but people bought scads of war bonds and victory bonds. I know in my own house as a kid growing up, they had a special drawer in the dinette area where all the bonds were stored that they had bought. They had never used the bonds for anything, and they just kept them, and they were fully mature. And there was a lot of bonds my parents had, a lot. I must have counted over 100 bonds in different increments. Most of them in the $15 to $20 range. So that's a lot of war bonds. That's a lot of war bonds and victory bonds to buy. So I think that's how they worked it out. Or else that for everyone to stand there and having to buy a bond I mean, you know, they didn't have credit cards back then. They didn't have ATM machines. You couldn't just slide your ATM card into a slot and buy bonds. You had to have cash, no checks. They wouldn't take checks. You had to buy cash to buy any kind of bond, whether it was a victory bond or a war bond. Now, with all that out of the way, after Fibber McGee and Molly comes My Favorite Husband from October 14th, one day before my birth, 1950. And the episode is entitled Liz Cooks for 12 People. Liz cooking? What? That's weird. And on Our Miss Brooks from October 15th, 1950, the day of my birth, the episode is entitled The Bookie. And then we go to The Halls of Ivy from December 12th, 1951. The episode is entitled Professor Royce Returns. I don't think I've heard this episode. It sounds intriguing. And after that is You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx and George Fenneman from March 15th. Tax Day, 1950, and the secret word is water. So enjoy all those, and I will see you all back here next week, God willing, and the creeks don't rise.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. I've mentioned quite a few unusual uses for Johnson's Wax. As a matter of fact, I've been getting some very interesting letters passing along more of these helpful suggestions, and I intend to mention them from time to time. But today, I'd like to go back for just a moment to fundamentals and talk about the real number one purpose of Johnson's Wax, the principal reason for using it. It's protection, of course, protection for the finish of your floors, your tabletops, windowsills, yes, and your leather goods, refrigerator, and countless other things. The wax itself takes the wear. The finish underneath is safe. That's why in times like these, it's so important to keep your floors, furniture, and woodwork regularly waxed. After all, it does save you hours of work, too. And that's important right now for all of us. And it makes your entire home gleam and glow with protected beauty. Mrs. McGee of 79 Wistful Vista goes shopping. It's apt to be a very expensive day. Not because she buys so much, but when a husband like hers has the free run of the house, almost anything can happen. And here, coming home from her morning's marketing, arms full of bundles and heart full of apprehension, we find Molly. Now, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Well, I wonder what McGee's been doing while I've been gone, I'm afraid. Be just like the rascal to take the piano apart to get a G-string for his mandolin. Ah, must be getting a massage. Oh, McGee! McGee, darling, I'm home! What in the name of... McGee, what on earth are you doing?
Go away, sis. Whatever you're selling, we don't want any today. Come back sometime when my wife is here.
McGee, sweetheart, remember me? I'm your wife.
I'm glad to meet you, sis. Now sit down and be quiet. When my wife comes home, she'll... Huh? Oh, hi, Molly. You home?
What's going on here? What's that pile of mud on the piano stool?
My dear girl, that is modeling clay. Have you led such a sheltered life, so remote from artistic circles, that you fail to recognize a sculptor at work?
Oh, I knew I should have taken you with me or stayed home myself. What's that thing on your head?
That, my dear girl, is a beret. All us artists wear berets. Keeps our hair out of the paint if we're painters. Out of the sculpt if we're sculptors. And we are.
Oh, we are?
Yep. I've entered a sculptor contest. Wistful Vista Art Center. First prize, $100. And I can use $100 like Herman Goering could use a fast plane to Patagonia.
But you've never had any training in sculpture, dearie.
Neither did Victor Hugo, but he was a success, wasn't he?
Victor Hugo was not a sculptor.
Neither am I. So I start even, Stephen, with Victor Hugo. Now, if you'll excuse me, my dear, I must have at it.
I say, McGee.
Please, Molly. When a creative artist is at work, one must never, never intrude with commonplace things. You have broke my mood.
I'll break your... Now, Molly, control yourself. He's just a boy at heart. Where'd you get that Mother Hubbard effect you're wearing, dearie?
That, my dear girl, is a smock. Borrowed it from a guy at the filling station.
I see. Then the message on the back of it is an advertisement and not a character reading?
Well, what's it say?
Tires quickly.
Oh. Used to say tires quickly repaired. It's an old pre-war smock. Now, let me see. A little more height to the forehead. Please, my dear, please, don't come between me and the mirror.
Oh, now this is too much. You admire yourself so much in that smock and beret that you have to strut in front of a mirror?
I gotta use the mirror, Molly. I'm making a clay model of my own head and shoulders.
Oh, no.
I'm calling it Self-Portrait of a Common Man. Now, let me see. Would you say I was about 3 inches between the eyeballs?
Open or shut?
Well, they're the same distance apart, open or shut, aren't they?
I don't know. When they're shut, I can't see them.
Well, never mind. I'll use the tape measure and...
Come in. Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, Molly. Who's the little goblin in the almost white nighty in the beret? He looks like Michelangelo's grandmother.
Well, no one expects a lowbrow like you, Aerosmith, to appreciate anything more artistic than a souvenir leather watch fob from Niagara Falls, Aerosmith.
Do you know what he's doing with that clay, Doctor? He's making a bust of himself.
Well, I don't think I can add anything to that remark, my dear. That leaves him as wide open as a dropped watermelon.
I'm calling it the Self-Portrait of a Common Man.
And a very apt title it is, too, my boy. If a commoner man than you exists today in this weary world, I've been lucky enough not to meet him.
Isn't that nice?
You're not just saying that because you admire me, are you, Doc? Incidentally, how do you like my sculpture as far as I've gone?
Well, speaking professionally and as a snap diagnosis, I'd say the model for that sculpture had an incipient cirrhosis, a chronic malfunction of the spleen, undetected adenoids, and a weakness for cheap cigars. The prosecution rests.
Look, Jack the Ripper. As an art critic, you're a fat-headed old tissue slicer. You probably think anybody with an etching is just allergic to seafood. After all, this is not a finished work, Doctor. It is just a hunk of common clay.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Tell me, Termite, just what do you plan to do with this wrung-out blob of river bottom after you get tired of teasing it? Convert it into a housing project for homeless earthworms, or bake yourself a batch of marbles, of which you could use a few?
Ignoring your crude attempts at humor, Doctor, I am entering this sculpture in the Whistle Vista Art Competition.
Oh, no.
Yes, indeed, Doctor. He's going to win the first prize of $100, he keeps telling himself.
He would. He's as self-centered as a yogi contemplating his belt buckle. Look, Cellini, take the advice of the family physician and throw that muck out the window. Then go take a long walk. Go bowling. Go skating. No, don't go skating. Your ankles would fold up like a street map of Pittsburgh.
Is that so?
Say, now, he used to play hockey, Doctor, for the Peoria Bullfrogs.
Yeah.
And very well, too. Golly, what a goalie.
He played hockey?
Yes, I played hockey. And I got old man Skinnamer to donate the rink, too. Skinnamer Ink McGee, I was known as in them days. Skinnamer Ink McGee, the slyest, slashingest skater that ever slid sideways to shoot a sharp shot through center or slap a spectator silly with a slick stick. Setting the stands to screaming as I slam in the score that sews up the series, making me a sensation from Saskatchewan to Salem, but I promised him a sculpture and I wouldn't want to fail him.
Singing.
Let me see. A little more on the left shoulder. That's it. I'm a dreamer, Montreal.
Hey, Molly, how's it look now? How are the ears? Too far forward?
I can't tell, dearie. Why don't you stick them on with a hairpin till you step back and see how they look, huh?
Hey, that ain't a bad idea. I think I'll...
No, McGee, let me do it.
Huh?
I've wanted to pin your ears back for a long time. Here's a couple of bobby pins.
Interruptions. Our doorbell gets more fingers pointed at it than the tray of French pastry. You get it, Molly? I says our doorbell gets...
It ain't funny, McGee. Oh.
Okay, come in anyway.
Mr. McGee?
Yes?
We're taking a poll. Do you mind?
Not at all, sis. Glad to help you.
Thank you. Good day.
Now, wait a minute, miss. What poll is this?
The one that holds your clothesline up. We just moved in next door.
Well, the nerve of some people, those new neighbors.
No, I can't be bothered with them now, baby. Time's getting short on this sculpture contest. I got to get busy. How am I getting them out? Is that smile right?
No, I don't think so, dearie.
No?
Looks like you just come from the dentist with lips full of Novocaine.
Yeah. Well, there's no use guessing on this thing. Might as well do it right. Take this tape measure.
And?
I'll smile real big. You know, the old personality stuff. The happy old Donna Meach, you know, corner to corner. And you measure. Okay, go.
Hold it.
Huh?
There, I got it.
What's it measure?
29 inches.
Ooh. Wow. I'm happier than I thought I was.
Dear, I was using the wrong end of the tape.
Oh, shucks, now we got to do the whole thing all over.
Hello, Molly. Hello, pal. What's all the putty for? Tightening up the windows for winter?
That's Clay, Mr. Wilcox. Himself here is entering a bit of sculpture in the Wistful Vista Art Competition.
Sit down and be quiet, lad. I must work fast. Don't want to lose the north light, you know.
Hey, does he do all this with his bare hands, Molly?
He does indeed, Mr. Wilcox.
If you'll observe carefully, my boy, you will notice that I can achieve with my thumb an effect which could never be duplicated by mechanical means.
What's that, dearie?
A thumbprint.
Please. Please, don't talk like that.
Oh,
talk like what, Mr. Wilcox?
Like mentioning thumbprints.
Oh, I'm sorry, I did.
You know how I feel about thumbprints and fingerprints, especially on furniture and woodwork. That's so unnecessary with Johnson's wax so available. Oh, say, by the way, I'm going to Canada tomorrow for a few days.
Oh, business trip, Waxy? I'll give you a note to an old friend of mine, Hiram Walker. Old friend of mine up there. Known him for years. He raises birds.
What kind of birds?
Swallows.
I'm going to visit the Johnson Wax plant in Brantford, Ontario. You see, my cousin, Big Sedgwick Wilcox, is helping with Canada's ninth victory loan.
Hey, I got a great slogan for them, Junior. Sign your name to victory.
That's the slogan they're using.
Oh, they can't do this to me. I just thought that up. They're hopping. Oh, well, tell him to go ahead and use it. It's okay with me.
Ah, oh, you're sweet, McGee. That's a good slogan, too, Mr. Wilcox.
Yes, indeed it is. It means that when you buy a bond, you help guarantee a sound and lasting peace. You're making a promise to help pay the costs of bringing the fighting forces home, rehabilitating and maintaining the wounded, provide essential aid to liberated countries, and build a personal stake at home. You know, one of the greatest expenses of a war is the peace that follows. You've got to get your country off its planes and ships and tanks and jeeps and put it on its feet again. And besides
hey,
that...
Hey, please, one side. Please, Mac. You're in my life, and I got to hurry with this sculpture.
Oh, I'm sorry, pal, and I wish you a lot of luck with your new career.
Thank you.
Oh, say, if it interests you, my nephew, Big Phelan Wilcox, works in clay.
That's all.
Yeah. He made $100,000 last year.
Heavenly days, $100,000.
I told you there was dough in this stuff, Molly. What does your cousin make out of clay, Junior? Statues, busts, fountains, or what?
Bricks. Oh. Well, so long now.
That boy. Oh, well, I must have it here.
McGee, what on earth are you doing now?
Huh?
What's that big round gob of clay on top of the head?
Oh, I had some clay left over, so I thought I'd put a hat on it. The easiest hat to sculpt is a derby. Kind of carries out the thought of the common man, too.
Very realistic, I'm sure. Maybe not.
Ah, dad rat, the dad ratted luck. Everybody crashing in here when I only got an hour to work.
Come in.
This is a fine state of how do you do.
How do you do?
How do you do? Mrs. Carstairs, do come in, Mrs. Carstairs.
Thank you.
Good day, Mrs. Carstairs. I trust you will forgive me, ladies, if I proceed with my work. One must create when one is in a creative mood, you know.
Oh, of course, Mr. McGee. But who is that you're boxing with?
He isn't. He isn't boxing, Mrs. Carstairs. He's sculpturing a bust of himself.
Oh, so sorry. I'm a little nearsighted, you know. Interesting piece of work, Mr. McGee.
Thank you, my dear. Won't you sit down and watch me work?
Thank you, no. I'm on my way to take my music lesson.
Oh, is that your bagpipe you have with you, Mrs. Carstairs? Won't you play something for us?
Sure, Carsty, play something. Ah, there's nothing like music to inspire us artists to finer efforts. Come on, kid. Pump up the old hot water bottle and squirt us out a little Highland Boogie.
Well, if you insist, you do insist, don't you?
Oh, yes, we do indeed, Mrs. Carstairs. What are you going to play?
With a bagpipe, Mrs. McGee, one does not plan to play anything. One takes what comes out.
Kind of a musical punch board, eh?
However, I shall endeavor to render a little song composed by my husband entitled... The drummer can always beat it, but the piper's left holding the bag. Well, are we ready?
Now go ahead, Mrs. Carstairs.
I'm all ears.
Quite.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
That was the shortest bagpipe number I ever heard by a player in the longest kilt I ever saw. Are you Scotch, Carsty?
Half Scotch.
What's the other half, Mrs. Carstairs?
Soda, to be amusing. Canadian, to be truthful. Good day.
Good day, Mrs. Carstairs.
Music must be quite an inspiration to you, dearie. You were really working like mad while she was playing.
Yeah, but she threw me all off. I found myself making this derby hat into a tam-o'-shanter. It's almost finished. Aha! There. It's done.
Well, all I can say, dearie, is that is a piece of sculpture.
Yep.
And I'm so worn out from watching you slap it around, I'm going upstairs and lie down a while.
Okay, Mommy. Ah, there goes a good kid. Does she try to discourage me when I take up a new career? No, sir. Does she threaten to get a new hubby when hubby gets a new hobby? No, sir. Is she the kind... Come in.
Oh.
Jeannie. Now, look, I haven't got time to
bathe. Oh, boy. My thighs, huh? Gee, that's a big one, mister. Can I play too? Can I, mister? Can I, please? Hmm?
This, my dear child, is not a mud pie. This is a prize-winning sculpture entitled, How'd You Like to Pick Up a Fast Dollar, Sis?
Gee, that's a good name for it, mister.
No. Look, the art contest closes in half an hour. You deliver this to the judges, and I'll pay you a buck.
How much you win if you get first prize, mister?
$100.
Hmm. 1%, yep. Huh? You realize, mister, in a court of equity, the party of the first part having contracted to deliver as per agreement certain stipulated...
Okay. $2.
It's a deal.
Yeah. Now get going, sis. I gotta get this entered before the contest closes and...
Hey, what do I cover it with, mister?
Cover it? Oh, let's see. Well, let's see. Where's there some wrapping paper? Oh, I know. There's some right here in the hall closet.
No, mister. No, please.
The art exhibit yet, McGee?
No, but I ought to hear from him any minute now that I got first prize.
Or at least an honorable mention.
Honorable mention, my clavicle. I take first prize or I take nothing. My gosh, if you'd have seen some of the sculpts they got down there. Why, they got one sculpt down there of a guy with the wings growing out of his heels.
That's Mercury, dearie.
Well, I'll bet he dropped 10 degrees when my sculpt came in. The minute the judges see my self-portrait of a common... Man, that must be my prize money being delivered right now. Come in.
Oh, my goodness. Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, hi, Eletrivia.
Good day, Molly. Hello, McGee. What's this I hear about you entering a sculpture competition?
Oh, he has indeed, Your Honor. He's got a 50-50 chance of winning first prize, too. They either say no or they say yes.
Well, I do hope you win, McGee. Then perhaps you would make a small donation to a new civic project of mine.
What project is that, Mr. Mayor?
We're considering building a bridle path through the outskirts of town. There's been considerable...
A bridle path? What do they need a path for? Every bride I ever knew of took a cab from the church right to the airport or the railroad station or...
Speaking of a bridle path for equestrians, McGee.
Equestrians or Episcopalians, the principle is the same, Mr. Mayor. Bride wants to walk around the outskirts of town.
Didn't say anything about a bride walking. I merely
now said just that... a darn minute, Latrivia. I realize you're a politician and you got to get votes, but by George, if you're going to build special paths for newlyweds and let us old married couples tramp along the hard pavements,
newlyweds have nothing to do with it, I tell you. But when citizens who keep horses come to me,
don't change the subject, Mr. Mayor.
I was not changing the subject. I was trying to tell you that a bridal path for horseback riders...
And how many people get married on horseback? Answer me that. Maybe somebody trying to get their picture in the paper.
But that hardly justifies the expense of building a special path for them.
Nobody intends to build a special path for newly horses. I mean horseback riders. Question. Look, did you ever own a horse, McGee?
Had me a little Shetland pony when I was a kid, did you? Her name was Favor. Used to get up early every morning and curry Favor so my father would...
Where did you ride?
What'd you say, Mr. Mayor?
I said, where did he ride his pony?
He rode it where everybody rides a pony, halfway between his neck and his tail.
That isn't what I... If you had a... Listen. Suppose this pony was in the city.
Yes.
Wouldn't you like to have a special road where it was safe to ride out of the traffic?
Why, certainly, but what that got to do with getting married?
It has nothing to do with getting married. You started this marriage business, not I.
We did not started. People have been getting married for 1,000 years.
And they don't have to have a special path to walk home on after they do it, too, either. And I think that any...
Will you listen to me? I merely stated that this city was building a bridal horse. A path for you today. I mean, when a man wants to take a bride, a horseback... McGee...
Yeah?
May I say just 2 words?
Why, certainly, Mr. Mayor.
Good day!
You know, Molly, I sometimes think he deliberately gets me into those arguments.
Just the same, McGee, building a special path for brides was kind of a sweet thought. Very romantic. With rose bushes along the sides, a bridal path might be a very lovely thing.
Yeah. First thing you know, people start using it for horseback riding. It ain't practical. But Latrivia's kind of a dream. Hot dog, there's my $100. Come in.
Hi, mister. Hi, Miss McGee.
Hi, sis.
Hello, little girl.
Well, did you bring it, sis? Did you bring my prize money? Where is it, sis? Where is it?
Oh, relax, McGee. Maybe you didn't win first prize. Let's face it.
Of course I won. That was the finest piece of sculpture I ever did. It had to be. It was the only one I ever did. Come on, sis. Come on. Didn't they give you an envelope for me?
Sure they did, I bet you. Here it is, mister.
Ah, thanks, sis. And here's your $2. Open the envelope, Molly. See if they sent cash or a check.
You've got the most sublime self-confidence, McGee.
Well, heavenly days, yes. A check for $100.
Well, Nat.
And a little note.
Huh?
Dear Mr. McGee, congratulations.
Well, I had to say that.
Enclosed fine check for $100 for your winning entry.
Yeah, you betcha.
Torso of a goat.
Yeah. What did I tell you? When you got a talent like mine, you can't...
For what?
Torso of a goat!
Oh.
What are you snickering at, sis? Just because them judges don't know a portrait of a common man from the torso of a goat?
Well, it was kind of hard to tell by the time I got here, mister.
Huh?
Boy, was it ever a mess.
What you mean?
I fell down with it twice.
Oh,
McGee and Molly will most certainly be making many new friends. Friends who perhaps will be using Johnson's Glow Coat on their floors and linoleum for the first time. Well, now any one of our many old friends could tell these ladies what a pleasing experience they have in store. With self-polishing Glow Coat, you can give your floors and linoleum the gleaming luster of a wax finish with practically no work at all. Glow Coat needs no rubbing or buffing. It's self-polishing. You simply apply and let dry. In 20 minutes, come back and you'll find even old linoleum gleaming with a brand new beauty. It's amazing the difference it makes. And of course, because Glow Coat protects the surface from wear, new linoleum stays like new, both in bright appearance and in the way it wears. Yes, our new friends have a pleasant surprise coming when they first use Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here in Toronto tonight in the interest of Canada's 9th Victory Loan. The objectives of this loan are the objectives of all of us on both sides of the border.
Buying Victory Bonds means that you sign your name to Victory, that you subscribe not only your money for the return and rehabilitation of our fighting men, but that you subscribe to the principles for which they fought. The right of living in peace, with a future security for yourselves and your families.
So invest in victory bonds today, to the very limit of your ability.
Peace with security is expensive, but it's the biggest bargain ever offered.
Good night.
Good night, all.
For the makers of Johnson's Wax for Home and Industry, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Jello, everybody.
Yes, it's the Gay Family Series, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tapioca puddings. Yes, sirree.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. In a little white two-story house located at 321 Bundy Drive, in the bustling little suburb of Sheridan Falls, George Cooper is just leaving for the bank.
Goodbye, my little husband. Kiss me, baby. You'll be home for dinner, won't you?
Uh-oh, dinner. Liz, I forgot to tell you something.
What?
Now, promise me you won't get mad.
Oh, go ahead. Nothing you say will upset me this morning. I'm in a good mood, and I'm going to stay that way all day long.
I invited Mother to dinner.
Well, that was a short day.
Now, Liz, you promised you wouldn't get mad.
I'm not mad, but your mother was here for dinner just 2 days ago.
That was 2 weeks ago.
How time flies.
Oh, Liz, really, you're being very unfair. She's coming over to dinner tonight, so why don't you just be nice to her?
Okay, George, I'll be nice to her. I'll feed the hand that bites me. Spinach, Mother Cooper?
Thank you, Liz, dear.
George, would you like some spinach?
I don't believe so, Liz.
But George, baby. Now we should eat our spinach.
But I don't like spinach.
Oh, we must all eat a well-balanced meal to keep our strength up. After all, food is the fuel, and your body is the furnace.
Yeah, but George's furnace has turned into a pot-bellied stove.
I must say, Elizabeth, I don't consider that George is overweight at all. In fact, I think he's been looking a little thin and peaked lately.
Here it comes.
Have you been getting enough to eat, baby?
Oh, sure, Mother.
Well, you don't look like it to me, baby.
Don't you worry, Mother Cooper. Baby gets his pablum every 3 hours.
Well...
Coffee, anyone?
Not for George, Katie. It keeps him awake, and you know he needs his beauty sleep.
Coffee, Mrs. Cooper?
No, Katie, it keeps me awake. And you know I need my ugly nap.
All right, Liz. Let's talk about Monday night. What are you having for dinner?
Monday night?
Oh, no, I forgot to tell you.
What?
I invited the Atterburys and some important out-of-town clients for dinner.
Oh, well, that isn't so bad, dear. How many extra will there be? 2, 4?
10.
10? As in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10?
Yes, and 2 of us makes 12.
12?
Well, but, honey, we've had 12 to dinner before.
I know, but I'm afraid Katie will get mad.
No, she won't.
Oh, I thought you were in the kitchen.
No, ma'am.
Well, I know it's short notice, Katie. It's only 2 days away. But do you mind if we have 12 people to dinner Monday night?
Not at all. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Well, Katie, Are you sure it won't bother you?
It won't bother me at all. I leave on my vacation Sunday.
Oh, no. I forgot.
Oh, gosh. What'll we do without Katie?
Oh, that's simple enough. Liz will cook the dinner for 12 people.
Liz cooking for 12 people. Oh, no.
Well, let's all have a big laugh. It's good for the digestion. Ha, 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 ha.
Now, Liz, don't get sore. You'll have to admit that's a pretty funny idea.
I fail to see what's so amusing about it. I could cook dinner.
Of course, dear. If you knew how to cook.
Well, I do know how to cook.
Oh, Liz.
What was wrong with the meal you just ate?
Liz, did you cook dinner tonight?
Certainly. I didn't put too much cheese in the souffle, did I?
Oh. So you made the souffle, Elizabeth?
Yes. Did you like it?
Why, it was delicious. In fact, it was so good, I wonder if you'd give me your recipe.
I'd be glad to. I'll phone it to you in the morning.
Oh, no, dear. I'd like it right now.
Oh. Well, you just put all the cheese and things in a bowl, and then you take a piece of soup and lay it on the top.
Yes, dear. But you didn't tell me how many eggs you used.
Oh, eggs. Katie, you were watching me. How many eggs did I use?
Six.
That's right. Six eggs.
How much milk?
Milk. Katie...
I wasn't watching.
Ooh.
Well, how many cups did it sound like?
It sounded like one cup.
Good ear, Katie. It was one cup.
Look, Liz, why don't you just admit you don't know how to cook and we'll hire someone to come in and get the dinner for us?
Well, for 12 people, maybe...
George, baby, since Liz has failed you in your hour of need, why don't you let Mother come in and cook for you? I'd be glad to do it.
That does it. I'm going to cook the dinner.
Oh, come off it, Liz.
I'd like to see it when you're done.
Go ahead, laugh. I'll show you. I'll get dinner for 12 people, and it'll be the best, the tastiest, the most wonderful dinner you ever saw.
Liz, is my breakfast ready yet?
Here you are, George. Bacon, fried eggs, toast, and coffee.
This looks wonderful, honey.
Thank you.
Did you cook all this yourself?
Sure, nothing to it. Go ahead, dig in.
Liz, these eggs are stone cold.
They are. Oh, darn it.
Well, how could they get so cold? How long ago did you cook them?
Last night.
Last night?
Well, George, I'm going to be so busy with the dinner party today. I cooked your breakfast last night and quick froze it.
Oh.
Well, it's a perfectly good fried egg. I just didn't defrost it enough.
Well, thanks anyway. I'll eat breakfast downtown.
Well, suit yourself.
Hey, Liz, about this dinner party, are you sure you want to go through with it? Maybe we should have someone in.
Now, don't worry, George. I have someone to help me.
Who?
Iris Atterbury.
Oh, brother. I get a great mental picture of you and Iris in the kitchen. Two blind mice.
Never mind. We'll be just fine.
Woohoo! Anybody home?
Oh, we're in the dining room, Iris.
Oh, Liz girl, George boy.
Hi, Iris. Well, I've got to run or I'll be late.
I'll see you later, dear. Come on out in the kitchen.
Okay. What are you going to have, Liz?
Well, I thought I'd have chicken.
Wild chicken. Oh, I love it.
Iris, please. Does Oscar of the Waldorf have broiled chicken?
I don't know. Does he?
We're having poulette amandine. Huh? I have a wonderful French recipe.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Is it hard to do?
No, there's nothing to it. All it calls for is, let's see now, for the dressing, onions, butter, eggs, parsley, celery, and either mushrooms or nut meat. I love mushrooms, but I don't have any in the house.
Well, I'll run down to the grocery while you're getting things ready.
Oh, wait a minute. I just remembered. We have some growing in the backyard.
Well, that's fine, fine. Oh, then I won't have to go to the... Older girl. Are they mushrooms or toadstools?
What's the difference?
Toadstools are poisonous.
Oh, dear. Well, isn't there any way of finding out if they're toadstools or not?
Oh, sure. I'll go out and eat one. If I'm not back in half an hour, use nut meats.
Oh, Iris, don't bother. We'll put in some walnuts instead.
Okay.
Well, let's get started. I'll cut the onion.
Well, I'll help you. We'll get done faster.
Okay, here's an onion for you.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I can't understand why people make such a fuss over cooking. There's really nothing to it.
Yeah.
You just follow the recipe and poof, chicken almondine.
Yeah. Hand me another onion. Here.
Oh, Iris, I didn't know cooking could be such fun.
Neither did I.
This is the best time I've had in ages.
Me too!
Well, it's pretty obvious that here's an occasion when Jell-O can save the day. Sure as shootin', if Liz and Iris treat the clients to a Jell-O dessert, the rest of the meal will be forgiven. I'll bet they'd all go for this autumn treat. Rich red strawberry Jell-O, teamed up with tart, tangy pineapple. Just prepare strawberry Jell-O as directed, using 1/2 cup of canned pineapple juice for 1/2 cup of water. When slightly thickened, fold in 1 cup of diced canned pineapple and chill until firm. It's a glorious combination, because that delectable strawberry Jell-O now tastes even better than ever. Yes, it's been made richer, even more fruit-like and tempting. All 6 delicious Jell-O flavors are chock-full of locked-in goodness, tasting so fruit-rich and tempting, they're a new treat every time. That's strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Look for the big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O, a registered trademark of General Foods that stands for Red Letter Desserts.
J-E-L-L-O.
As we return to the Coopers, it's several hours later, and we find the kitchen knee-deep in dirty saucepans, greasy skillets, broken eggshells, and well-thumbed cookbooks. Surveying the wreckage proudly are Liz and Iris Atterbury.
Well, Iris, isn't it about time to take the chickens out of the oven?
Well, we've got to be sure, girl.
Yeah.
Let's see. What oven did you use?
Well, the only one we've got, that one on the stove.
No, I meant what temperature.
Oh, what a temperature. 600 degrees.
That sounds a little high.
Well, it's what the book said.
Oh, no, look here. The book says 300.
I know, but we have 2 chickens, so I doubled it.
I never would have thought of that.
Let's see, what time do we put the chickens in?
9:00, and it's 2:30 now.
5.5 hours. Well, they ought to be cooked.
Ooh, let's take them out of the oven.
I can't wait to see them. Well, where are they?
They've got to be in there. Look in the back.
Okay. Iris, don't you know this is a gas stove? Why did you put charcoal in here? Charcoal?
Yeah, see in the back? Two little lumps of charcoal.
With legs and wings. It was all those breadcrumbs you put in. They burned like toast.
Maybe we can take them out and scrape them.
No, I don't think so, Liz. I think they're done for.
Oh, no, it's Mother Cooper.
What timing?
Timing nothing. If I know her, she waited outside till she caught the aroma of burnt meat.
Elizabeth, where are you?
She's lost the scent. Quick, Iris, shut the oven.
Okay.
In the kitchen, Mother Cooper.
Oh, Elizabeth, dear.
Hello, Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, Iris, how are you? I just dropped over to see how you were coming with your little dinner, Elizabeth.
Oh, fine, fine.
What are you having, if I'm not being too nosy?
You nosy?
Well, what are you having?
Chicken almondine.
Really? That's my favorite dish. But you must watch the chickens once they're in the oven. If you aren't careful, they'll burn.
No.
Yes, it's true. You just keep your eye on them until they get to be a nice, crinkly brown.
How about a nice, crusty black?
Iris. What? Elizabeth, what's that burn smell?
It's me. Iris just gave me a hot foot.
Oh, don't be silly. It's something in the oven. Let me see in there.
No, don't.
Uh-huh. Just as I thought.
Oh,
they look like two little blackbirds. Well, what are you going to do now?
I'm going to get 22 more and bake them in a pie.
I wash my hands of the whole thing.
Good.
Well, I certainly know when I'm not wanted.
Since when?
Well. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Must you rush off?
Well.
That's telling her, Liz. She thinks you can't cook a dinner. So this one wasn't very good. You can cook another one.
Sure.
Miss girl, what's wrong?
I can't go through this again.
Oh, I'm sure you can. And I'll help you get started before I leave.
Oh, leave?
Well, yes, girl, I have to get my hair fixed for the dinner tonight.
You mean I'm going to have to burn the next two chickens all by myself?
Now, Liz, you just buck up. Look, I'll stop by the market on the way to the beauty shop and have them send out two more chickens.
Well, okay.
Uh-huh. And this time, don't try anything fancy. Put them in the pressure cooker. That way they'll be done in a hurry.
Yeah, in a hurry.
Yeah, and while they're on their way here, you can start the dressing.
Start the dressing?
Start the dressing. Liz?
Huh?
You're looking a little dazed. Are you sure you know what to do?
Oh, sure. While you're having your hair done in the pressure cooker, I'll take the chickens to the beauty parlor. I mean, while the chickens are having their hair done, I'll be dressing in the pressure cooker.
Oh, poor dear. I know what you mean.
That's good.
Well, if you need me, I'll be down at the beauty cooker. Pressure parlor. Good luck, girl. Goodbye.
Hello.
Is that you, Liz?
Yes.
I just got home from the beauty parlor. How's it going?
Oh, sure.
What happened, girl?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you.
Well, tell me. How'd the two chickens turn out?
Which two?
Well, I know you burned two. What about the other two?
Which two?
Will you stop saying which two? Tell me what happened.
Iris, you're talking to a woman who's gone through 8 chickens today.
Liz, what about the two in the pressure cooker?
The pressure cooker exploded.
Well, what about the chickens?
They look delicious.
What do you mean, they look delicious?
I can't get them down off the ceiling.
Well, that's 4. What about 5 and 6?
Gone.
Gone?
I got so confused cleaning up after 3 and 4, I threw 5 and 6 in the garbage disposal.
Well, this is unbelievable.
Finally, the butcher ran out of dressed birds and sent out 2 live ones.
Well, did you cook them?
Cook them? I can't even catch them. When last seen, 7 and 8 were going east on Bundy Drive.
Oh, you poor thing. 8 chickens and nothing to show for it.
Oh, yes, I have. Before she left, 7 laid an egg on the kitchen table.
Well, look, Liz, I had a feeling something like this might happen, so
Iris, I have to go. There's someone at the back door.
Well, don't worry about a thing, girl. I have a feeling everything's going to be all right.
Oh, sure. Goodbye.
I'm coming. Mrs. George Cooper?
Yes?
Dinner for 12 from Johnson's Catering Service.
A dinner for 12 people? Let me see. Oh, roast beef and potatoes and green beans and Yorkshire pudding. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't send it. You just brought it. Where's the card?
Here.
Mrs. Cooper, I had a hunch you might have trouble with your dinner. Good luck, Katie. Oh, bless Katie and her hunches.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be seeing you.
Thank you again.
The pleasure was all mine.
Oh, that wonderful Katie. My dinner party's saved. I'll have to call Iris and tell her. Now, who's that?
Hi, lady.
Did you forget something?
Well, not exactly. I got in my truck and I looked at the address of my next delivery. And it's you.
Me? Well, let's see what this one is. Oh, my goodness. Lobster thermidor and French fries and asparagus. Oh, isn't that just scrumptious?
Yeah. Aren't you going to kiss me?
Let me see the card. I knew you'd be needing this, dear girl. Signed, Iris. Oh, Iris is the best friend a girl ever had, isn't she?
I'll say. Iris who?
Never mind. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, that Iris. I have to call her. Oh, no. If that's who I think it is, I'm up to my snood in food. You again.
Yeah, it's me, the Horn of Plenty.
Now, let's see what this one is. Oh, my, would you look at that. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah. What is it?
It's pheasant under glass. Where's the card?
Here.
Iris told me you were having your troubles. Hope this little snack fills the bill. Mr. Atterbury. Oh, isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Oh, everything's turned out all right after all. I'm so grateful to you for bringing all these things. I want to give you a little something.
Oh, boy!
Unpucker, bud. Here's your tip.
Gee, a bowl of Yorkshire pudding. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Hello.
Elizabeth? I just called to set your mind at ease, dear. Even after the way you treated me, I've saved the day for you.
You have?
Uh-huh. I made a complete dinner for 12, and I'll bring it over.
Well, that's very nice of you, Mother Cooper, but thanks just the same. Dinner's all ready and waiting in the kitchen.
Really, Elizabeth?
Mm-hmm.
What are you having?
Well, I had a little extra time today, so I'm getting my guests a choice of prime ribs, lobster thermidor, or pheasant under glass.
But I don't understand.
Well, why don't you come over to dinner, too, Mother? I have plenty of food.
Really?
Yes, George will pick you up. Goodbye. La-di-da! La-di-da! Hello!
Hello, dear. How's everything going?
Oh, fine, fine.
You, didn't knock yourself out cooking, did you?
No, George. It was no effort at all. What time will you be here?
Well, that's what I called to tell you about.
What do you mean?
Well, honey, it's the funniest thing. I just checked with my calendar and,
Yes?
The dinner isn't tonight, it's next week.
Oh, no!
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. And Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, running a high school is usually a difficult task. But Osgood Conklin, principal of Madison High, where Our Miss Brooks teaches English, somehow manages to make it seem even harder.
Last week, for instance, it was his anti-gambling crusade. Friday morning at breakfast, I discussed the situation with my landlady.
But I didn't think gambling was such a big problem at Madison, Connie.
It isn't, Mrs. Davis. But Mr. Stone, head of the Board of Education, is cooperating with the DA's office in a countywide drive against gambling. Naturally, Mr. Conklin hopped on the bandwagon. He's instituted some pretty sweeping reforms in our school.
Like what, Connie?
Like taking the gum machine out of the cafeteria. Plus which, he deputized me to stamp out penny matching.
Did you encounter any in your class, Connie?
Well, there were a couple of kids matching pennies in the coat closet during a study period, but it only went on for about 10 minutes.
10 minutes? Didn't you stop them, Connie?
Oh, of course I stopped them immediately. May I never get my 55 cents back if I didn't.
Well, you're not the only teacher at Madison. Why didn't you get Mr. Boynton to help you out?
I did. The next two times I investigated that coat closet, I took Mr. Boynton with me.
And did you find anyone?
Gee, I forgot to look. Well, if you'll excuse me now, Mrs. Davis, I'd better get ready for school. Walter Denton's picking me up in a few minutes.
All right, dear. Oh, before you go, would you do me a favor, Connie? Take this $5 and pay my phone bill this afternoon. I'd send it in, but frankly, I'm afraid it's just about overdue. Me and that absent mind of mine.
You are quite a pair. Don't worry about it, Mrs. Davis. I'll take it in to the company today. Mr. Conklin was in the same predicament a couple of weeks ago. He asked me to attend to the school phone bill for him.
But I thought the Board of Education took care of school bills.
They do, but this one was an emergency. It seems the auditor in charge of the funds took an unexpected vacation.
An unexpected vacation?
As the head of the board put it, he went south with the money. Anyway, Mr. Conklin gave me the $30, and I paid it the very first thing I think it was the very first thing.
Connie, you did pay that bill, didn't you?
Oh, now I remember. I gave it to Walter Denton to pay. For a minute there, I was worried.
You gave the school phone bill to Walter Denton to pay, and now you're not worried?
No. I can always start looking for another job. Would you mind decreasing the speed of this rocket ship just a little, Walter?
For you, fair one, I'll make the old chariot tiptoe. But why so jittery on this most beautiful of all possible days?
Because, oh fast one, on this most beautiful of all possible days, I've just been stricken with the most horrible of all possible thoughts. Briefly, the school phone bill I gave you 2 weeks ago.
School phone bill. School phone bill.
Oh, no, don't tell me you forgot it.
School phone bill. Oh, now I remember. Oh, wasn't that the bill that was overdue and Mr. Conklin asked you to pay it for him at once?
Yes, that's the one.
And you had something important to do downtown and told me to take care of it immediately?
Exactly. Oh, well, it's a relief to know that's attended to. I knew you wouldn't let me down, Walter.
Of course I wouldn't let you down. I told him to pay it at once when I turned it over to Stretch Snodgrass.
Stretch Snodgrass? Listen, Walter, I know Stretch is a great athlete and a good friend of yours, but he's a bird brain.
You're just worrying in advance, Miss Brooks. I'm sure he took care of it. Oh, look, there's Stretch going into school now. We'll ask him about it. Hey, Stretch, wait up a minute.
Okay. Hi, Walter. Hello, Miss Brooks.
Stretch, I'd like to ask you a question.
Fire away.
Don't think it's not a temptation. Do you recall the phone bill Walter gave you to pay 2 weeks ago?
Remember, Stretch? I told you it was urgent.
Urgent? Oh, yeah. Wasn't that the phone bill Mr. Conklin gave Miss Brooks to pay in a hurry?
That's right. It was overdue, and I gave it to Walter and told him to pay it without delay.
Yeah, and I had something very important to do myself that day, so I gave it to you and I told you to take care of it immediately.
Sure. I remember it all now.
Then you took care of it.
Absolutely. When I handed that bill to my sister, I told her to pay it at once.
To whom it may concern, copy this phone bill and send it along with 10 cents to 5 of your friends, and if no one breaks the chain, who knows, someday you may be the lucky recipient of a very low number at Alcatraz.
Well, I've straightened out your office for you, Daddy.
Thank you, Harry.
I'm certainly glad the telephone company gave you a new number.
So am I. The past few days have been quite an ordeal, I can tell you. I still don't know how those telephone people could give a disc jockey the same number as mine.
It was just a mistake, Daddy. I'm sure it won't happen again.
It better not. Those ridiculous song requests had me frantic. Imagine, I get down to my office, happen to even say good morning to a soul, and 10 people call up and say, good night, Irene.
And you have a brand new number.
Well, not a minute too soon. Mr. Stone is coming over to discuss our anti-gambling campaign this afternoon.
I still don't understand why the board is so interested in the district attorney's gambling crusade.
It's very simple, my dear. They're merely cooperating with all local agencies to run down the head of a big gambling syndicate purported to be operating in this immediate vicinity. Actually, the police haven't the faintest idea of the man's identity.
They don't know anything about him at all?
Just that he's referred to as the big boy.
The big boy? Well, that's some clue, isn't it?
Yes. At least they won't go around looking for a girl. Now, Harriet, if you'll excuse me, I have many... I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, this is Dutch. Give me 200 across the board on Harbor Song and a third, huh?
What's that? What number do you want?
Main 5463.
Let's see. Yes, this is Maine 5463, but I'm...
Well, then give me 200 across on Harbor Song and a third.
Harbor Song? You must have the wrong number.
Please, you don't have to be so cagey. We got protection now. Hey, this is Ben a bookie, isn't it?
No, this is Osgood the principal. I mean, this is... There must be some mistake.
Look, the big boy gave us this number to call for track conditions, latest odds, and laying off bets. And a big boy don't make no mistakes.
The big boy?
Yeah. Now use your head and play ball.
What?
Or we'll use your head and play ball. 200 across on Harbor Song, huh? Goodbye.
What's going on, Daddy?
Harry, this is terrible. I should have quit while I was a disc jockey. By some fiendish mistake, the telephone company has given me the same number as a bookmaker.
Now, calm down, Daddy. All you have to do is call the company and ask them to change it again.
But it took 3 days to change it last time, and Mr. Stone is coming here this afternoon. There's only one way out. Harriet, you've got to rush to the phone company and get a repairman to disconnect this phone immediately.
All right, Daddy, but I wish you'd relax. There's really nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about, she says. What if Harbor Song wins?
Gosh, Miss Brooks, I thought you'd never come out in the hall.
It couldn't be helped, Stretch. My contract here calls for me to teach a little English every day. I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be sorry. Most of them kids of yours need to be learned plenty. Well, I just want to tell you I checked up on that phone bill for you. You see, I don't want anybody to go around incinerating that I'm undependable.
I don't blame you. That kind of incinerating would burn me up, too. What did you find out about the bill?
Well, luckily, my sister realized how important it was.
Oh, wonderful. Then she took care of it.
I'll say she did. She gave it to my mother to pay. Now your worries are really over. My mother is just as dependable as I am.
That's no way for a child to talk about his parents.
Brooks, we're cooked. That phone bill couldn't have been paid. The telephone man is here to disconnect the phone.
What? Where is he, Walter?
He's right down the hall. He just asked me how to find Mr. Conklin's office, but I stalled him off. I gave him directions to another place entirely.
But that's only a temporary stay. Tell me where you directed him, and I'll go find him.
Where I directed him, you can't go. Miss Brooks, he's coming back now.
Pardon me, ma'am, but could you tell me how to get to Mr. Conklin's office?
Mr. Conklin's office? Who's Mr. Conklin?
Well, I don't know, but my orders read, disconnect phone in Mr. Osgood Conklin's office.
Oh, that Mr. Conklin. You must have been carrying those orders around for quite a while, young man.
What do you mean?
He died 10 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. What about his office?
His office? Oh, that's been converted into a student coat closet.
Coat closet? Then why did this kid direct me to...
Everybody makes mistakes. The phone company must have made a mistake in your instructions. You'd better go back and tell them about it.
Okay. Well, that happens once in a while. But I still can't get over this kid sending me on such a wild goose chase.
Me either. Seems like a very strange place to be looking for a wild goose.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cleaner. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
More than 2 years research showed the Colgate way of brushing teeth right after eating helps stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. Yes, the Colgate way stopped tooth decay best. Better than any other home method of oral hygiene.
No other toothpaste or powder, ammoniated or not, has proof of such results. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. Yes, Colgate Dental Cream, and only Colgate Dental Cream, was used in this research.
So always use Colgate's to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And when you follow the Colgate way, Colgate Dental Cream stops tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, even after the repairman left, I was still jittery for fear he'd come back and reveal the truth about my negligence to Mr. Conklin. It afforded some relief, however, to sit in the cafeteria at lunchtime and pour my baleful story into the handsome ears of Mr. Boynton.
Well, now, let's see if I've got this straight, Miss Brooks. 2 weeks ago, Mr. Conklin gave you the school phone bill, told you it was overdue and must be paid at once. You gave it to Walter Denton. Walter Denton gave it to Stretch Snodgrass. Stretch Snodgrass gave it to his sister.
And the green grass grew all around. It's no use talking, Mr. Boynton. I'm probably in big trouble. Supposing that repairman comes back again to disconnect the phone.
Well, isn't there some way to pay the bill before that happens?
How? The $30 Mr. Conklin gave me, I gave to Walter with the bill, and he gave it to... Well, we've been all through that. Temporarily, we've got to assume it's gone. And the point is, where am I going to get another $30?
Well, perhaps some other member of the faculty might help. That's what friends are for, to help one another. Now, I consider myself a friend of yours, Miss Brooks, and... Well, I want you to know I'm prepared to assist you in this matter.
You mean I can count on you for...
$2. I'll canvass the rest of the faculty for the remainder. I know they'll come through for you.
You think so, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, take my word for it. They'll help you to a man.
Right now, I'd rather they just help me to some money.
Well, if you'll excuse me, Miss Brooks, I'll go see if you were the...
Pardon me, Mr. Boynton. And Miss Brooks, he's back. The telephone man is back.
No, where is he, Walter?
Well, Stretch and I caught him as he was entering the building, right outside Mr. Conklin's office.
You didn't let him get into Mr. Conklin's office. Tell me that you thought of a way to stall him again.
Well, I didn't, but Stretch thought of a wonderful way.
How?
He's sitting on his chest.
Here, Daddy. I brought you a sandwich. I figured you'd be too upset to eat in the cafeteria today.
Oh, you're right, Harriet. Why doesn't that confounded telephone man get here? If Mr. Stone arrives before this phone is disconnected,
I... But I don't understand, Daddy. The phone company said they sent a man over much earlier today.
I know all about that. But when I called them to send him back, they claimed I died 10 years ago.
But that's ridiculous.
Thank you, my dear. However, if that fellow doesn't come back, I don't
I've got an idea. Why don't you just pull the wire out yourself?
What? Me commit a malicious mischief against the telephone company's property? You forget, Harriet, your father is the principal of a great high school. And a high school principal does not resort to such measures, no matter what the emergency.
But it might be the only way out.
Stop goading me, Harriet. I'm just not physically equipped to try pulling that telephone wire out of the wall. Again.
Oh, there you are, Stretch. Walter told me what happened.
It was the only way, Miss Brooks. I had to do it.
I suppose so, but you were taking an awful chance. Right outside the principal's office, too.
Oh, it couldn't be helped.
I guess not. Now get off the man's chest, Stretch.
Yes, ma'am.
This is extremely decent of you.
Well, you see, sir, Stretch here probably thought you were a prowler on account of that black bag you're carrying. That's about it, isn't it, Stretch?
About.
Well, I don't know why all this is going on, but right after you told me Mr. Conklin was dead, the telephone company told me he was alive.
Well, everyone's entitled to his opinion. Oh, you must have wanted Mr. Conklin Jr. It's Mr. Conklin Sr. who passed on.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that's cleared up. Now, where's Junior's office? I've got to take care of his phone.
Phone? You mean you've come to reconnect it?
No, I've come to disconnect it.
Oh, what a shame. The company sent somebody over to do that an hour ago. Well, you've certainly bagged your quota of wild geese today, haven't you?
Well, I don't mind telling you it's been a discouraging experience. Well, I'll go back and check in again. This is what I get for not listening to my mother. She said that she wanted me to take up the timpanis. Goodbye for now.
You know, I'm going to miss him.
Miss Brooks, who was that man who just left the building?
Man, Mr. Conklin?
Yes, the man with the brown bag.
There was no man, Mr. Conklin. And it was a black bag.
Thank you, Snodgrass.
Yes, sir.
Step into my office, please, Miss Brooks.
Yes, sir.
Now, about that man, the one with the black and brown bag. Was he by any chance the telephone repairman I've been expecting?
Oh, were you expecting a telephone repairman?
Yes, Miss Brooks. I've gotten someone else's telephone number by mistake. A mistake which could take 3 days to rectify, whereas it only takes 10 minutes to disconnect the phone from the wall.
Oh, is that what he was here for?
Precisely. And now, may I ask why you so obviously dismissed him?
Well, in a few ill-chosen words, Mr. Conklin, I didn't pay the phone bill when you gave me the money 2 weeks ago, and I thought the repairman was here to disconnect your phone because of my negligence, and I'd like to remain on the premises just long enough to say goodbye to some of my friends. I thank you.
I never heard such gibberish in all my born days. I've got more serious worries than a delinquent phone bill on my mind, Miss Brooks.
You mean it's all right, Mr. Conklin?
No, it's not all right, but I'll take that up later. Whatever you do, don't mention your omission to Mr. Stone when he gets here.
Mr. Stone?
You've got to help me, Miss Brooks. Mr. Stone will be here at any moment to discuss my gambling campaign. However, some very strange phone calls are liable to interrupt my conference. That's why I want you to sit in on this meeting.
Me? But Mr. Conklin,
I'll say that you're taking notes on our discussion. Your main function, however, is to answer the phone. That's him.
But I don't understand, Mr. Conklin. What kind of phone
There's
calls
no
have been coming?
There's no time for explanations now. Be right there, Mr. Stone. Just act perfectly casual, no matter what you hear when you pick up that receiver. And remember, don't repeat a word of it. Well, Mr. Stone, come in, come in.
Thank you, Osgood.
Miss Brooks here is going to take some notes on our anti-gambling discussion. That is, if you have no objection.
Not at all. Nice to see you again, Miss Brooks. You seem to be in the pink.
Want a bet? I mean, it's nice to see you again, too, Mr. Stone.
Sit down, Mr. Stone. Here's a comfortable chair. Miss Brooks, you sit down by that desk with the phone on it.
Yes, sir.
Well, what's the news from the district attorney's office, Mr. Stone?
They haven't made too much progress, Osgood. It's rather a difficult task in view of the fact they don't know just who the big boy is. And two, we can't seem to find out where his syndicate headquarters are located.
But they do think it's in this area.
Definitely.
Oh, good, good. Then it's just a question of time before the bell rings for his final round. Would you get that, please, Miss Brooks?
Yes, sir. Hello?
This is Dutch again. Who's this?
This is Miss Brooks.
Well, what'll they think of next? Now they got a doll answering the phone.
Well, thank you.
Tell me, sugar, what do you think the track conditions are at Narragansett, huh?
Frankly, I haven't given it much thought.
Who's that you're talking to, Miss Brooks?
It's Dutch, Mr. Conklin.
Please make it brief, Miss Brooks. Tell him we're busy.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, Dutch, but we're quite occupied at the moment.
Occupied? Oh, look, now, don't give me no rush act. Frenchie told me I should call whenever I feel like it.
Oh. Mr. Conklin, Dutch says that Frenchie told him to call.
Dutch, Frenchie, who are they?
A couple of delegates we know from the United Nations.
Just hang up, Miss Brooks. Hang up at once.
Yes, Mr. Conklin. Bye, Dutch.
Now, as I started to tell you, Mr. Stone, we've done wonders here at Madison. Firstly, by eliminating all vending machines, I've destroyed the impulse to deposit coins in slots of any kind.
He's even discouraged use of the public telephone. Naughty word.
The instinct to gamble must be crushed at the earliest opportunity. One of the reasons it's so difficult to track down this big boy mob is because of the unwitting protection afforded them by the uninformed. They operate in candy stores, skating rinks, even schools.
Even schools?
Nice timing, Dutch. Hello?
Look, I'm tired of playing games. How's the weather at Narragansett?
Well, what do I know about the weather at Narragansett?
Just a moment. Narragansett's a big racetrack. Hand me that phone.
Oh, no!
Dutch, the conditions at Narragansett are weather clear, track fast. Now, would you like to make a bet?
A hatchet man should be a cinch on a fast track, and we got a load bet on him with us. I better lay off about 600 across the board, huh?
600 on hatchet man, it's a bet.
Ah, good, good. That's one thing about the big boy. He makes you pay through the nose, but he gives you the service, huh? Well, so long.
So long. Well, Osgood, that was a very revealing phone call.
Now, just a minute, Mr. Stone. You know where I stand on gambling. Why, we've eliminated penny matching, bottle cap tossing.
And any minute, we're going to chop up the weighing machine. come in, whoever you are.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Conklin, but could I speak with Miss Brooks for just a moment?
I suppose so, Boynton, but please be quick about it.
Oh, yes, sir.
Here, Miss Brooks, here's $20 toward the money you owe for the phone bill.
Well, thanks, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, don't thank me. Thank your fellow teachers. I didn't have time to reach them all, but everyone I asked to chipped in and said he knew it was a safe bet.
Did you hear that, Mr. Conklin? The other teachers are all chipping in. Mr. Boynton could only get $20 now, but they all know it's a safe bet.
Safe bet, eh? Miss Brooks, tell me, is this money for the hatchet man, too?
Naturally, but I don't think that's a very flattering way to refer to Mr. Conklin.
Perhaps he'd like it better if I refer to him by his real name. Eh, big boy?
Big boy! Mr. Stone, there's been a frightful misunderstanding. Miss Brooks, tell Mr. Stone what this money is for.
But, Mr. Conklin, you told me not to mention it.
Well, mention it! Mention it!
Well, Mr. Stone, this money is for a phone bill that I neglected to pay.
I would say your telephone service is functioning admirably.
Let me explain, Mr. Stone. Just today, I received a new phone number in answer to a request I made 3 days ago.
Why did you want your number changed 3 days ago?
Because he hasn't got a recording of Goodnight Irene.
Goodnight Irene.
Good night. Come on, Mr. Barnum.
Say, what's going on here?
That's what I'd like to know. Why don't you come clean, big boy?
Will you please stop calling me by that name, Mr. Stone? The phone company happened to give me the former number of a bookmaker, and it was too late to have it changed before you got here.
Balderdash! You could have sent for a telephone repairman and had the phone disconnected.
Yes, why didn't you send for a telephone repairman? I mean, he did send for a repairman, Mr. Stone, but I thought he was coming to disconnect the phone because I hadn't paid the bill, and I sent him away.
Unpaid phone bills, mixed up numbers. You know what I think? I think you're all in this together.
Mr. Stone, I can't say that I like your attitude.
Force yourself.
Miss Brooks, can you give me one shred of evidence to support this fantastic phone bill story?
Well, sir, I...
Excuse me, everybody, but the door was open, so I thought I'd just botch on in. I've got the news you've been waiting for all day.
Really, Stretch? What part of the school is on fire?
No, it's about the phone bill. I just found out my mother paid it.
She paid it?
Sure, here's the receipt.
Well, I guess this answers your request for evidence, Mr. Stone. Here, take a look at this.
Just what does this receipt mean, Miss Brooks?
Read it, you'll see.
I already have. Now suppose you read it.
Certainly. Received from Madison High School, $30. Signed, the Consolidated Gas Company.
Martin as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight? Yes, tonight, show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Luster cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives you Kay Dumit's magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Better than a soap, better than a liquid, Luster Cream is a dainty cream shampoo. Leaves hair three ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen. Soft, manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. No special rinse needed after a Luster Cream shampoo. So gentle, Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight? Yes, tonight, try Luster Cream shampoo.
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a luster cream shampoo.
And now once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, we finally convinced Mr. Stone that we weren't running a gambling syndicate at Madison High School. And when I got home, I sat down at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee and the afternoon papers.
You look pretty worn out, Connie. Why don't you stretch out and take a nap?
I will, Mrs. Davis, but first I've got to call Mr. Conklin right away. I just saw something in the paper I've got to tell him about.
What is it, Connie?
His $2 parlay on Harbor Song and Hatchet Man paid $32.
Burns Red, reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo, for soft, glamorous, caressable hair, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch.
You want a beauty soap for a beauty bath.
And your bath becomes a beauty bath when you change to proper cleansing with Palmolive soap.
For bathing with this beauty soap brings you the full beautifying effects of Palmolive's mild and gentle lather, proved by doctors to bring most women lovelier complexions in just 14 days.
Bath-size Palmolive is designed to give you everything you need for all-over beauty care. Fragrance for daintiness, mildness for loveliness, purity for gentleness, big bath size for thriftiness.
So get big bath size Palmolive. So mild, so pure, so right for all of you.
Be sure to listen to Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday over this same network. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The beer that made Milwaukee famous presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College as the guests of our sponsors, the brewers of Schlitz beer.
The taste of Schlitz, the taste so many people prefer, has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. If you like good beer, do as millions of people are doing all over the nation. Ask for Schlitz, the most popular beer in history. And now, the Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. At this time of the year, academic responsibilities are pushed around by social obligations. And while great public issues wait for action, momentous personal decisions must be made. For instance, what gifts to buy for Aunt Edith and Cousin Ted. Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy, in common with most men, solves such major problems by leaving the Christmas shopping to his wife, Victoria, who at the moment comes in laden with packages.
Toddy, help! Whoops! Quick!
You're coming, darling, coming. Good heavens, where are you?
Oh, here I am, under Mrs. Merriweather's silver salver.
Oh, here.
Be careful. You better unload me by layers. Now, take off the top one first, but watch it. That's the Wellman's Lazy Susan.
I've got it. The Wellman's what?
Well, you know, it's a whirligig for nuts and pickles. I got them in one in Chartreuse.
A whirligig for Wellman. Nuts and pickles, yes.
They make a nice lyric for a song, don't you think? Let's save up our dimes and nickels and buy old Pickle Puss some pickles. Let me sit down and get my breath. It was rough going at the Ivy department store today. I think it's really very intelligent of you to let me do the shopping, darling. A mere man could never survive it.
Yes, but just a few days ago, I did venture forth on a secret mission.
Oh, Toddy, something for me?
In an unguarded moment, I was swept into the whirlpool of shoppers, only to find that every woman in sight seemed to think I was the same size as her husband.
What?
Would you mind trying this hat on? He has a head like yours. And hold this shirt up a moment, please. I think you're about the same across the shoulders.
Oh, darling.
I began to feel my identity slipping, being so many women's husbands.
Well, being what so many women would like their husbands to be. Did you find what you were looking for?
Well, I found a charming little porcelain figurine of an Arcadian shepherdess, which I thought you'd like...
For my dressing table, yes. But Well, why did you tell me?
Because it turned out to be a receptacle for used razor blades. Vicky, I deplore the current trend toward gadgetry and gimcrackery. Everything must be made to look like something else.
Mm.
And then hollowed out so that it may be planted with some creeping greenery. Statuettes of the Venus de Milo with electric clocks set into her midriff. The graceful spinning wheels of our grandmothers tortured into magazine racks. French dolls into telephones. And lamps. Lamps! Is there any conceivable piece of household junk to which some demented decorator will not attach a plaster base, a frilly shade?
A doorbell is still a doorbell, Toddy. And Louisa, who is still Louisa, will answer it.
Well, it's probably just as well. I would have aroused myself to such a pitch of violence that I might have had the neighbors coming to your rescue.
I would like to speak to Dr. Hall.
Why, Professor Heaslip, come in.
Well, greetings, Skipper. Good afternoon, fair lady. Oh,
hello, Professor Heaslip.
I see the bounteous spirit of Christmastide has placed its tinsel fingers on the presidential hearth.
That's one way of putting it.
I beg your pardon, fair lady.
You haven't been to see us for some time, Professor. I hope that this is just a social visit and does not portend that evil has fallen upon the English department.
Skipper, I am happy to report that there is never anything portentous about my English department. As I like to tell my students in a moment of gaiety, be kind to English. Remember, it's your mother tongue.
That is very funny.
Oh, it was nothing, fair lady. Well, now that we've dispensed with the pleasantries, may I come directly to the subject of my visit?
Well, of course.
A very delicate problem, Skipper. What do you propose to do about the old man?
Well, if you're speaking of Santa Claus, I shall do nothing about him except admire his stamina and wish him well.
Oh, I feel it my duty to inform you, Skipper, that Lucien Royce has come back.
Lucien Royce? Here at Ivy? Why, that's splendid news.
Well, Professor Royce? Well, of course, didn't you study under him here at Ivy?
Yes, he was one of Professor Heaslip's predecessors as head of the English department. Retired from Ivy about, 15 years ago and went to live in the south of France. I haven't heard from him since the war. I just assumed that he must be nearly 80 now.
Ah, yes, a sad spectacle, Skipper. Poor old man and his dotage, without purpose, helpless, and probably penniless.
I'm very sorry to hear this, Professor.
Have you spoken to him?
Alas, yes. He just stared at me without recognition. I shudder to think of his being exposed to the mockery of those who didn't know him in his flowering, such as you and I, Skipper. For such cases, there are comfortable rest homes, you know.
Yes, and there are uncomfortable suggestions. Do you know where he is living?
Ah, me. Poor old fellow seems to be living on a bench in front of Emerson Hall, just nodding and smiling and offering bits of candy to the students. Anyway, that is where he was when I passed by there just now.
I see. But before we dispose of Professor Royce, the least we might do is to welcome him back to Ivy.
Well, you're the skipper. It's your ship. However, I should be on guard, lest sentiment overrule sound judgment in the matter. Oh, dear me, look at the time. I'm overdue at semantics. Good day, fair lady. Good day.
Goodbye, Professor Heaslip. Now, why is he being so awful about Professor Royce?
Well, because Heaslip, for all his false-heartedness, is an insecure man. He's terribly afraid that Professor Royce may overshadow him, as well he might. Royce is, and will be at any age, a great human being. His mind reaches out to you, and you become his with a willing affection.
Well, all Heaslip was interested in was getting him out of the way. Ship him off to a home for the aged. Not while we have a spare bedroom.
Good for you, my darling. Exactly the way I feel. I'm far into Professor Royce's debt, and if he would permit me to repay it in shelter and encouragement, I would be most happy. I wonder how close Heaslip was to the real truth. I think I shall go and see.
Well, let me go with you, Toddy. He must be a fine man, and you know something? You've spoiled me for the other kind.
The There he is, Vicky, sitting on the bench. So much smaller than I remember him.
Maybe the bigness you remember was inside of him. Toddy, I think he's asleep.
Yes. Perhaps we shouldn't disturb him. We can come back.
Wait, don't go. You're Bill Hall.
Professor Royce.
I saw you coming. I just closed my eyes a moment to remember the first time I ever saw you, when you registered for my English class. Won't you and your beautiful companion sit down? Here, let me brush the snow away.
I don't believe you ever met my wife, Victoria, Professor.
Wife? Oh, yes, somebody did tell me. I don't remember who. Dear me, I never got around to sending my congratulations. I hope that you'll both accept them now, with the interest they've accumulated over the years.
Why, thank you, Professor Royce. Now, that makes me feel like a bride again, but not that I ever really stopped.
We're delighted to have you back, Professor. Only I wish you had let us know you were coming. I would like to have arranged a small get-together with some of your old friends.
That's kind of you, very kind, but I came back to have one more look at Ivy and to see if the reality of it is as green as my memories. You know, I sometimes forget what happened last Saturday, but I can remember the hour and the day when I received my first appointment to the faculty here, and that's decades ago. Tricky thing, memory.
Yes, and possibly the most precious of our possessions. A repository for the jewelry of our past, to which each of us has the single key.
You know, I don't recall whether it was at my Aunt Edith's house or my grandmother's, but there was a sampler on the wall that I've remembered since I was a child. It said, "Memory is the power to gather roses in winter."
Then I guess I have quite a large garden to take care of.
Well, I hope there's one bud with a ticket on it labeled Genus Freshman. Species? Bill Hall.
Oh, there is, my dear. Yes. I can see him much better as an undergraduate than later on when he joined the faculty.
Now tell me, Professor, what did William look like in those days?
Fresh. I mean, bright-eyed and spick and span. Never talked much, though.
Yeah, well, he got over that.
And he was pretty shy.
Was he?
Old Maggie Spencer. Remember her, Bill?
Oh, yes. Of course, she was my psychology teacher.
Well, she used to think you were kind of a problem. Never opened your mouth in class, but always turned in the best papers. I told her not to worry. When you untied your tongue, you'd be a spellbinder.
Oh, well, sometimes I think I've become more of a loose-leaf binder. Filled with transient observations, assorted notes, and obsolete agenda.
I bet you don't remember when Maggie Spencer was first appointed to Ivy. A woman professor of psychology? It was heresy. Caused one of the biggest... say, Bill, what time is it?
Why, it's almost a quarter to five.
Oh, I've got to hurry or I'll miss my dinner.
Where are you staying, Professor?
I tried to get close to the campus, but... well, it's more practical. I'm at Mrs. Shea's boarding house. It's only a 15-minute walk. I've enjoyed this, Bill, and... what was your first name, my dear?
Victoria.
Lovely name for a lovely girl. Bill hasn't changed, Victoria. Still bright-eyed and spick and span. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Professor.
Oh, Toddy, he's so nice. He's like a teddy bear.
Vicky, remember what Charles Dickens said? Father Time is not always a hard parent, and though he tarries for none of his children, often lays his hand lightly on those who have used him well.
And Heaslip wants to throw him on the ash heap. Well, I think we should have a nameplate put on this bench just for him.
Yes, if anybody ever earned it.
Oh, Toddy, look, he's forgotten his umbrella. But we can still catch him.
No, darling. It won't help much if it snows again, and I don't think it's going to rain. And it provides us with a good pretext to go and see where and how he is living. I think we can return his umbrella without letting him know we are worried about his overhead.
many years here at Ivy, I've come to the conclusion that professors are not all absent-minded. Some of them quite the contrary, like Professor Reynolds, dean of the law school, for example. Yesterday evening, I was hurrying around the corner of Emerson Hall when I bumped into the dean.
I'm sorry.
Hello, Dean Reynolds.
Hello, Ken. I hope you're not badly bruised.
Oh, not a bit, Dean. I should have been looking where I was going.
Well, so should I. You know, I'm not often guilty of such wool gathering.
Oh, you're not an absent-minded professor, then.
Not today, anyway. No, today I'm a present-minded professor.
Present-minded?
Yes. I'm on my way to buy a case of presents. Christmas, you know.
A case of presents? Do I dare hope?
You do.
Thank you.
I always have a couple of cases of Schlitz beer on hand at Christmas. I find that several bottles to the mailman, the grocery man, and other faithful visitors not only gives them a little added cheer, but gives me a reputation for good taste, sound judgment, and as a legal expert, knowing when a case has real merit.
And I suppose it also helps to dispel the common belief that law is a dry business.
Good point, my boy, good point. As a matter of record, I believe Schlitz gave a sound precedent for good taste in 1849, 103 years ago, and has been confirming it ever since. With 24 character witnesses in every case, a double jury, you might say, bringing in a directed verdict of res ipsa loquitur.
Will the court brief me a little on that res ipsa what?
Res ipsa loquitur means... The thing speaks for itself.
Oh, I see. And Schlitz definitely is the thing with people who like the taste of good beer. In fact, Schlitz tastes so good to so many people that it's first in sales in the USA.
I believe it. So, what do you say we clear the court, adjourn to my chambers, and sample the evidence?
Oh, gladly, sir. That's one bar examination I never refuse to take. Let's go. Turn to Ivy. It's the next day, and when Victoria Hall opens the door to Dr. Hall's study, she discovers an unexpected visitor.
Why, Mr. Merriweather, I didn't know you were here.
Miss Tate let me in, but up until this minute I didn't know why I came. But now that you're present, ma'am, I have the best of all reasons for being here.
Oh, Mr. Merriweather, you should be put up in bottles and given to all women to be taken once a day as a tonic.
Well, thank you, but I don't think my 1/16th Indian blood entitles me to be a medicine man. Say, do you know what your esteemed spouse wants to see me about? Said to get over here on the double. My words, not his. Not that I care, mind you. Any day that I can beat him to his own home and have a few cherished words with you is the day my caddy gets a $5 tip and never knows why.
I haven't the slightest idea, Mr. Merriweather. This was one of his mysterious mornings. He muttered through his orange juice and was thoughtful through his toast and left with a quotation from Antony and Cleopatra.
I know. No, it gives me a horrible sense of inferiority. All I can remember that's quotable is Humpty Dumpty or Little Boy Blue. I guess my heart goes where the Mother Goose goes. But what did Antony say to Cleo?
Well, he said, fare thee well, the elements be kind to thee, and make thy spirits all of comfort.
Ah, Shakespeare. Mm. What that man has done for the quotation mark.
Well, hello, Bill.
Ah, Mr. Merriweather, Vicky.
Hello, darling. How are the elements? Kind to thee?
You didn't have to rush, you know. It's no particular hardship just standing around making highly proper advances to your wife.
Charles, if you did not admire my wife, I would begin to suspect your mental health. But I need your well-established sanity at the Board of Governors meeting this afternoon. I have a project in mind, and I've already won the reluctant approval of Mr. Maypole, our librarian.
Well, that's where you've been all the morning, the library, huh?
Yes, on behalf of Professor Royce.
Royce? Royce. Uh-huh. Well, that's right. Somebody did mention seeing old Royce wandering around the campus. He did a lot for this college in his day. Is it true he's back?
Yes, he is. And while I know he'd resist any charitable gesture, I think he would look with favor upon the project I have in mind. Now, Charles, if you and I can swing it with the Board of Governors, Then, Vicky, you and I can return the professor's umbrella this afternoon.
Well, we'll each carry one end of it.
And, Bill, don't worry about the Board of Governors. Clarence Wellman will be the opposition, naturally, as long as this is a humanitarian project. But we'll take care of him. And, Mrs. Hall, is it painful to have your ears pierced?
I don't know, Mr. Merriweather. Why?
Well, when you think how often we have to pin Clarence's ears back, you'd think he'd make it easy for himself.
And it was much easier than I thought, Vicky. As a matter of fact, the Board of Governors was quite enthusiastic.
But even Mr. Wellman?
Mr. Wellman, most of all. He said, tradition is a living thing at Ivy. Living, Dr. Hall. Symbolized in the sacred plant which clings to our hallowed walls. Walls, Dr. Hall.
Well, that's very good.
Thank you, darling. There was a tear in his eye, too.
It couldn't have been sentiment. He must have a cold. Here, do you want me to take the umbrella?
No, darling. I'll carry it. Reminds me of my romantic past.
Romantic? What, an umbrella?
Certainly, darling. An umbrella built for two should have been the romantic song hit of the 90s, not a bicycle.
Toddy, Toddy, give me your answer, do.
Well, my answer is that the curls blowing round a lady's neck can be undoubtedly devastating when viewed from the back seat of a tandem, but give me the umbrella snuggle all the time.
No, not all the time. I won't unless I'm the girl.
But the professor's umbrella reminds me of that lovely walk we had in the New Forest in England. Remember?
Yes. It was before we were engaged.
Well, I was engaged.
Well, I was on the brink, shivering happily.
Yes, and I said, come on in, the water's fine. Yes. Anyway, that day in the New Forest, we'd finished our picnic. And we had reached this spot where...
We'd better hurry, William. It looks like rain, and we've only one umbrella. And, but you had one, too, when we met this morning at Waterloo Station.
Uh-huh.
Where did it go?
When I left you to get the tickets, darling, mm-hmm. I saw an old lady without an umbrella. Yes. So I said, ma'am, it's going to rain. Take this. And she said, thank you, young man, but what about you? So I said, madam, we have one. That is all we need.
Oh, William, now that was sweet and thoughtful.
Oh, dear, no. It was selfish scheming and conniving. Hmm? I've been praying for rain ever since.
Oh, well, don't give up, darling.
I'll never give up. But, where are we?
Well, lost, I think. In the New Forest.
Wonderful. Nothing in sight but the greenwood. Beech and oak, gorse and bracken. Robin Hood and his merry men.
No, that was Sherwood Forest.
Oh, yes.
But this one casts a spell too, doesn't it? And it hasn't changed at all since the days of William the Conqueror when he made it all a game preserve.
Good old Bill. Preserving it all these years just for you and me. From William to William with fondest regards. And take good care of Victoria.
Oh, I'm sure he had us in mind all the time. But you know, some very frightening things have happened here. William Rufus was killed here. He was shot by an arrow.
Ah, those ill-fated Williams. Destined to be pierced with arrows. And now... history repeats. Here is William Hall, mortally stricken with one of Cupid's sharpest darts.
Mortally?
I shall never recover, darling. Victoria, stop. Stop a moment and listen. Not a sound. What these old woods have seen and heard. What secrets the trees must whisper to each other. And I have one more secret for them.
You just pretend I'm an oak tree and tell me too.
Very well. I love Victoria. And that's the first time I ever kissed an oak tree.
Oh. You know, Each time I come here, William, I love it more. But never more than this time.
Victoria. Oh, the New Forest, where love and history hold hands, haunted with memories. If we listen carefully, we may hear the horn of a huntsman, the whistle of an arrow.
Or the cry of a falcon. Listen. What's that?
Well, that was an arrow. Where is it? Did you see it?
We never see it. You said yourself the place was haunted.
Listen. Someone singing.
A lost troubadour, do you suppose?
Oh, it may be. Perhaps it's coming from some cottage nearby where they may give us a tankard of ale or a posset of mead.
Mead. They still drink it in these parts. It's made with lemon, honey, cowslip, and sweetbriar. But listen, he's coming closer.
And that is the flower for me. I oftentimes have plucked that red rosebud till I gained
it. Victoria, where was he? I didn't see him, did you? Where did he go?
I think he went the way of the arrow, William. We won't see him.
Oh, what wonderful things happen to you and me.
Don't they? It must be.
Love, my dear. Let's put up the umbrella. In a haunted forest, it's the only privacy we can expect.
But the sun is breaking through.
I know it is, darling, but let's put up the umbrella.
But darling! Why are you opening the umbrella? The sun is shining. Where are you?
In the New Forest, listening to a troubadour.
But darling, we're at Mrs. Shea's. Mrs. Shea's boarding house.
Mrs. Shea's boarding house? Oh, of course, yes. But that's no reason to lose the opportunity for one more umbrella snuggle.
Oh, Charlie.
Well, I've been carrying that old umbrella around for years, and now I've finally seen a good use for it.
Oh, Professor Royce, we were just coming to see you.
Yeah, I hope you weren't worried about your umbrella.
No, not at all. I'm always leaving it someplace. But it always comes back. And sometimes with the most charming people attached to it.
Were you going anywhere in particular, Professor? Are we keeping you?
No, I stopped going anywhere in particular a long time ago.
Well, then I have something to discuss with you. The Board of Governors has endorsed a new project to be called the Annals of Ivy. I've been eager to get this started, but I've had some difficulty in finding a suitable person to write the initial volume.
Yeah, Professor, you have no idea what a relief it was to William when he discovered you were here, when you solved his problem.
I have?
If you could find the time, Professor, we'd be very grateful. Naturally, there's a modest, but I hope satisfactory, subsidy.
You'd pay me for daydreaming?
Well, there'd be some research. As a matter of fact, there's a good deal of work involved.
And a good deal of life. You see, Ivy was my life.
That's it, exactly, Professor. Now, we'd like your kind of personal approach. Oh, perhaps we could call it the autobiography of a college. And the first volumes could be Birth, Childhood, and Youth of Ivy. And we could... But let's discuss it over dinner. Have you dined yet?
Why, no, I haven't.
Well, then why don't you join us? We'll find a quiet place in town, somewhere where we can... I know. Mrs. Dodds.
Old Lady Dodd? We used to say, dine and die at Dodds. Poor Mrs. Dodd, we gave her a bad time. Oh, yes, Bill, yes, thank you very much. I'd be delighted. Oh,
wait a minute, Professor. You've forgotten your umbrella again.
No, I didn't forget it. But there's not room for three of us under it.
The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman, has been presented by Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. The taste of Schlitz. the taste so many people prefer, has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. Why don't you, too, enjoy the most popular beer in history? Next time, every time, ask for Schlitz beer. Now, here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good night, everybody.
Good night from all of us.
And from our sponsor, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and its thousands of friendly dealers throughout the nation.
Good night.
We'll be seeing you next week at this same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Mr. Merriweather is played by Gail Gordon. Professor Heeslip was Alan Reed, and Professor Royce was William Johnstone. Tonight's script was written by Barbara and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Milton Merlin, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who invites you to enjoy on television the Schlitz Playhouse of Stars with Helen Hayes, Margaret Sullivan, Ronald Reagan, and more of the brightest names of Hollywood and Broadway. See your newspaper for Time and Channel. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Oh, we love the world that's around us here today.
Preceding was transcribed.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is water. W-A-T-E-R.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho! I thought he went where the wild goose goes. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx! Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,000 for one of our couples tonight. George Fenneman, who's first?
A couple of Irish people selected from our studio audience just before we went on the air. It's our way of noticing St. Patrick's Day, Groucho, and here they are... Miss Beth O'Haggerty and Mr. John Daniger, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, folks, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you use every day. Mr., how do you pronounce it?
Danaher.
Danaher.
Yes.
What do you got that G in there? Just to fool people? That's a real Irish name, huh?
Real Irish, I bet your life. It's a real Irish name.
And we got a plug for the show, too. Where are you from, Paddy, me lad?
I'm from Roscommon on the banks of the Shannon in the west part of Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds pretty authentic, huh? How long since you were in Ireland?
42 years.
And after all these years, you still have a touch of the old sod?
You betcha. Yes, sir.
Have you tried Fell's Napster and a good stiff brush? Miss O'Haggerty, at least I can pronounce that, huh? Beth O'Haggerty, huh?
That's right.
Which part of Ireland are you from, Beth?
Well, I didn't come from Ireland.
And how is it you're Irish? Was one of your ancestors a policeman?
Both of my grandparents came from Ireland.
Oh, I see. Then you're Irish twice removed. I've been twice removed from Ireland myself. Well, if you're not from Ireland, where are you from, Miss O'Haggerty?
I'm from Los Angeles.
Well, you're a fine-looking lass.
Thank you.
Why is it you're not married, Beth? Beautiful girl like you.
Oh, I just never found any man that was strong enough to take me away from my job, my career.
What are you, a wrestler?
No.
What is this tenacious job that you stick to like adhesive tape, huh?
Well, at present, it's a secretary in the tax and insurance department at Claremont.
Yeah, I was there a couple weeks ago. I did a scene in Bing Crosby's picture, Mr. Music. You didn't see me tripping the light fantastic there.
Well, my job doesn't have much contact with the talent.
Well, mine doesn't either. But, but nevertheless, I'm in that picture. How old are you, Mr. Donegan?
60 years.
60? Well, you don't look it. Huh? You're a fine broth of a boy. And when I say broth, I don't mean Irish stew. Huh? Well, you're a little old here for Beth, aren't you? Huh?
I think so. I really think I am. But besides, I'm married.
Well, then it's not very important, huh? How did you meet your spouse, Johnny?
Well, it's well,
about...
Well,
there was more to it than that, I hope.
It's about 45 years ago. It was in a small town in the west of Ireland, and she was out on the street chasing a chicken.
And you were doing the same thing, huh?
I caught the chicken, and I took the chicken back, and I put it in the hen house at the back of her house. And then I went back the next night and made my acquaintance, and, well, that's all. I'm married to her now anyway.
What happened to the chicken?
I don't know. I never made any inquiries.
Patty, do you speak Gaelic?
A little bit, not much.
Well, could you give us a few words?
Well, Kay Wiltu, Tama Gamai, Kay Wiltu Hain, Gamai, Garima Haikut, Tasuru Gagan, Kanteken Me Aristu.
What does that mean, huh?
Well, it means, good evening, how are you? Oh, fine, thank you, how are you?
Where is your chicken tonight?
I hope
tonight,
I'll see
huh?
you again.
Could you tell me a joke in Gaelic?
No, I couldn't. I really couldn't tell you. I wouldn't be able to remember that. Now, what I could tell you is a short one in English, if it's any good to you.
Well, frankly, we could use a joke about here. Let's hear the one in English, huh?
Well,
Don't make the English too good, or I won't understand it.
This isn't about the English. It's in the English language.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's about Pat that was up on the fourth floor in a building and was on fire. And he shouted to Mike down on the sidewalk, and he says, Mike, I'm going to jump. Catch me. So he jumped plopped down on the sidewalk, and Mike jumped away from him, and he flopped on the sidewalk and was stretched out. And he says, say... Why didn't you catch me? He says, I was waiting to see if you'd bounce.
Well, Pat, if that joke is any indication, you're a much older man than I thought you were. Tell me, Mr. Donay, have you ever seen a leprechaun, huh?
No, I've never seen a leprechaun.
What is a leprechaun? Is it anything like a republican?
No, they're imaginary people.
Well, that's a republican, all right. They're imaginary people these days, too. Huh? Tell me, how do you usually celebrate St. Patrick's Day, Johnny?
Oh, take a couple of nips or something like that. Hang around the rest of the day and take it easy.
What's the real reason you Irish celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Well, because St. Patrick is the patron saint of Ireland, and he drove the snakes out of Ireland.
And where are they now? Huh? And then after a nip or two, I suppose they all came back again. Huh? Well, after talking to you two, all I can say is a happy St. Patrick's Day to you both. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to work together for a chance at $1,000. You bet your life.
When you call on any one of the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers, you'll find it's their honest desire to please you, no matter how small the job to be done. The DeSoto Plymouth dealers offer you the benefit of not only the best tools and equipment, not only the factory-trained mechanics, but they also feel it's important to be courteous, to give their customers a square deal. That's their creed, their way of doing business. So no matter where you drive, remember there are DeSoto Plymouth dealers anxious to serve you. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth.
Now let's see if an Irish Carlene and her partner will be the ones who get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question. Fenneman, bring them up to date on the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,000 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's going on out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected capitals of foreign countries as your category. Is that correct? Okay, now you have $20. How much are you going to risk?
10.
What is the capital city of Denmark?
Oslo.
Is that the answer you two agree upon? Do you agree with that, Beth? One answer between you now. I'm sorry, it's Copenhagen. Now remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. How much of the $10 will you bet?
5.
What is the capital city of the Netherlands?
Netherlands. Don't know.
Take a guess, Beth.
I can't even think at this point.
Well, it's Amsterdam.
They now have $5.
Now you're down to $5. Now here's your third question. How much of the 5 will you try?
The 5.
What is the capital city of Spain?
Madrid.
Madrid is right.
Well, we're on the way now. They have $10.
All right, now you got $10. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 10 will you try?
10.
All right. What is the capital city of Portugal?
Lisbon.
Lisbon is right.
And they wind up with the $20 they started with.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, don't go away. You may get a chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still water. Perhaps the next couple will say it. They're a barber, Mr. Arthur Fredman, and a housewife, Mrs. Dorsey Ridgney, selected by our studio audience just before we went on the air. And here they are, folks. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life. And if one of you says the secret word at any time, he wins $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you use every day. A barber and a housewife, eh? Mr. Friedman, you're the barber, I presume, huh?
That's right.
Well, there are lady barbers, you know. Where are you from, Mr. Friedman?
1533 Vine Street, Cy DeVore's Barbershop.
Is that where you were born,
huh? Minneapolis, Minnesota, though.
I thought perhaps you were born in the third chair as you come in, huh? You were born where?
Minneapolis, Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes.
The land of 10,000 lakes, and you left all of them, is that it?
That's right.
Where are you from, Mrs. Rigney?
I'm from Green Acres, Washington.
What sort of work does your husband do?
My husband is a disabled veteran, but I'm a truck driver.
Truck? What kind of a truck?
Well, now I'm hauling house trailers with a truck.
People live in these
things? Oh, yes, people live in them.
And you pull them across the country while they're living in them?
No, I just pull them and set them on their lot, and they use that in place of the house, most of them.
Oh. How long have you been a barber, Mr. Friedman?
17 years.
17 years, huh? You don't look it. You're a very young-looking man. Where does your husband get his hair cut, Mrs.?
Well, he doesn't have any steady barber.
What, is he stewed? Do your customers ever ask you what's a good way for a man to save his hair, Mr. Friedman?
Yes, they do.
Well, what do you tell them?
Put it in the cigar box.
You know, there's a sister joke to that one you just pronounced over there. The one where the fellow writes in and says, how do you avoid falling hair? And the fellow writes back, step nimbly to one side. Now, incidentally, I know of a hair tonic that'll grow hair in a frying pan. But who wants a hairy frying pan? That's no joke, but then this is a very old frying pan. How did you get to be a barber? Did you start out when you were a little shaver?
Went to barber college.
Huh?
I went to barber college.
You went to barber college?
Yes.
What influence has the electric razor had on the barber profession?
It cuts down the shaves about 25%. Mm-hmm.
And what do? Every time there's another razor sold, you raise the price of the shave, is that it?
Do you use electric razor?
I use an electric razor, yes. Someday I hope to get the chair. You know, there's something I've always wanted to know. Where do you get all these old magazines for your customers?
We don't have all these.
Are you buying from dentists?
We don't have
Or are you in business for yourself, huh? Where do you get them? You don't have old magazines?
No.
Well, if one of your customers brings in the latest issue of Look magazine, be sure to see it, will you? There's a flattering piece about me and our show in the current Look magazine. Maybe it'll help them forget that they just lost your ears in your barbershop. Why is it women don't get bald as often as men, Mr. Friedman?
Well, the female is different than the male.
Well, Well, that's about as accurate a statement as I've ever heard. Nobody is more aware of that than I am, Mr. Freeman. Well, now, let's see if a professional clipper like you and can clip an old cut-up like me for $1,000. Now, you beat the other couples, and you earn the chance at the big question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners.
The Irish couple won $20.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected songs about anatomy as your category. Is that right?
That's right.
Now, you have $20. Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
10.
What's the name of this song? Okay, Jerry. Well, what do you say, kids? What do you say?
I'm sorry.
If the smoke gets in your eyes.
Huh?
Now, remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. That's the big prize anyway. Now, how much of the $10 will you try?
Five.
$5? Give me the title of this song. Play, Jerry.
Tiptoe through the tulips
is right, huh?
We now have $15.
All right, now you got $15. How much of the 15 will you try?
10.
Okay, here's your third question. Let's see if you can identify this one for $10. What do you say, kids? Take a guess. I'm sorry, it's In My Arms. You should have known that.
They now have $5.
Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the five will you try?
Five.
What's the name of this song? Play. Take a guess.
Body and Soul.
Body and Soul is right.
And they wind up with $10.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, in just a minute, our last couple will try for the chance at $1,000. Fenneman, who's ahead?
Well, the Irish couple is leading with $20. And the secret word is still water. Perhaps the next couple will say it. We invited some collectors from the Bureau of Internal Revenue and some Hollywood business managers to the show tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected collector William Kenny and manager Maurice Dolman. Gentlemen, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, gents, to You Bet Your Life. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you use every day. A business manager and an income tax collector, is that right? Mr. Kenny?
That's right.
You're the income tax man, huh?
Yes, I am.
I recognized you by your short form, huh? Well, where are you from, Mr. Kenny?
I'm from Miami, Florida.
How long have you been an income tax collector?
About 7 months.
How did you happen to go into this nefarious trade, huh?
Well, I took the examination in Florida, and I wanted to come to California.
Well, you know, you can live in California without being with the revenue department, huh? Although it's not easy. What prompted you to become an income tax man? I mean, what did you do prior to that?
I was a bank examiner for the federal government.
Do you have a nickname, Mr. Kenny?
Yes,
What is it?
At school, they call me Frog.
Why, did you hop around a lot in those days? Are you married, Froggy?
Oh, yes, I am.
And how helpful is marriage from the income tax standpoint?
Well, this year, wife is worth $600.
Well, everything's inflated these days. Is that alive, Mr. Kenny? Or... has to be alive, huh?
She must be alive at the time of filing.
You don't care if they drop dead the following day, huh? How about children? What are they worth?
This year, kids are worth $600.
Hey, the little ones are worth just as much as the big ones. Do you have any children, Mr. Kenny?
Not yet.
Not yet. Well, then you're out $600, aren't you? By the process of elimination, I presume that you're the business manager, Mr. Dolman, huh?
I am.
Where are you from?
I'm from New York.
What outfit do you work for?
I'm in business for myself.
Oh, you mind your own business, eh? Just what do you do in your business?
I manage the business affairs of other people.
Then you don't mind your own business. What do you have to know to be a business manager, Mr. Dolman?
Well, primarily you have to have a good head for business.
Is that in addition to the one you carry around now? Well, Froggy, let's get back to you, huh? You're standing there dreaming of somebody you're going to soap tomorrow, huh? Specifically, what is your job with the Income Tax Department or the Bureau of Internal Revenue?
Well, we...
Pretty fancy name for a crooked outfit, huh?
Out and track down delinquent taxpayers and...
Suppose a fellow owes you $7,000 and he has no money, what do you do now?
If he's got the money, we'll collect it. If he doesn't...
If he hasn't got it, you can't throw him in the can for that, though, huh?
If he hasn't got it, no, and he hasn't prepared a fraudulent return.
No.
But we don't put him in jail if they just don't have the money to pay the taxes.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing to know, now. Now, what are some of the things we should know about income taxes? For example, should a married man file a joint return or a single return?
This year, it would be to his advantage to file a joint return with his wife, and that way he could take advantage of the split income provision.
When do I get my split? What's a joint return? Is that a nightclub with a money-back guarantee?
A joint return is where husband and wife file one return together and pool their income and prepare one tax return.
Now, in filing a joint return, how much am I allowed as a deduction for myself?
This year, you would be allowed $600 as head of the house.
That's just fantasy on your part, you know. I'm no more the head of the house than you are a frog, Mr. King. How about Mr. Dolman over here? Does he get another $600 off because of his extra head for business? Now, what is the difference, Froggy, between the short form and the long form?
Well, the short form, the 1040A, you can
claim...
That
gets in at 11 o'clock, huh?
You can claim or... That is, on the short form, you can claim only 10% deductions of your gross income.
Do you carefully examine every form that comes into your office, Mr. Kenny?
No, we don't go over every form. We just look at the above-the-average forms. That is, we...
You mean the ordinary form you don't pay any attention to? Well, would you like me to come down and just look at the average form for you? I'm not as calloused as you are, you know. Why don't you examine every form?
Well, we just don't have the personnel to go over every form that goes in the office. But in regards to that, I want to add that we do pay particular attention to the forms that go into big figures. Mm-hmm.
This could get out of hand, you know. But... You must have an army of bookkeepers to go over all those forms. How long does it take you?
Well, it doesn't take long. We have a huge machine that is really a mechanical brain.
You have a mechanical brain? And Mr. Dolman has two heads over here? I'm the only one around here with a single-track mind. I'm still thinking of those average forms. Now, if you were my business manager, Mr. Dolman, how could you save me money on income taxes?
Well, I...
Oh, brother, are you on a spot? I can see the handcuffs sticking out of his back pocket. I'll bring you an apple pie with a saw in it in the morning.
Well, what we do is keep proper record of your deductions.
Uh-huh.
In your business, you listen to the radio. You have to listen to other comedy programs that we can take depreciation on your radio.
You have to listen to other programs? I'd rather lose my deduction and not have to listen, huh? Now, suppose I was thinking of hiring you to help me take care of my business affairs, Mr. Dolman. I haven't any, but just pretend, huh? What would you want to know about me?
Well, first, I'd want to know if you were honest.
If I were honest, I wouldn't need your help, Mr. Dolman. Well, between the two of you, you succeeded in confusing all three of us. Now, you're going to try for a chance at $1,000. You beat the other two couples, and that's all you have to do. You're pretty smart fellas. I can't tell you how much they won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The Irish couple is ahead with $20.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected instruments played by orchestra leaders as your category. Now, here's your first question. You have $20. How much will you try?
We'll try for $10.
Okay. What instrument does Harry James play?
Trumpet.
Trumpet is right.
Well, to a good start, they have $30.
I want to warn you of one thing, boys. You know, if you win any money here tonight, you've got to put it on your tax. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
20.
What instrument does Gene Krupa play?
Drums.
The drums is right, huh?
They're climbing now. They have $50.
All right, you got $50. Here's your third question. How much of the 50?
40.
What instrument does Tommy Dorsey play?
Trombone.
Trombone is right.
They're way up there now. They have $90.
Well, you slid right into that one with the trombone. Now, you got $90. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much will you bet?
Shoot the works.
What instrument does Carmen Cavallaro play?
Piano.
The piano is right.
And they wind up with $180. And that means the tax man and the business manager get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question. What do you expect of the folks who service your car? Efficient service? Courteous service? Service at a fair price? Well, you get them all when you visit one of the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers. You'll find they're not only ready and willing, but able to give your car the very best in service. And that goes for the major repair jobs as well as the simpler ones. DeSoto Plymouth dealers have factory-trained mechanics who know cars inside and out, no matter what make or what year it happens to be. And in the hands of these expert mechanics are the most modern tools and equipment made. Yes, that's the kind of top service you can count on when you drive your car in at the sign of any authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here is the tax man and the business manager, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question, Groucho.
Here we go for $1,000. Ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you and think carefully. And please, no help from the audience. Here it is. In 1777, the American army defeated the British under General Burgoyne in what has become one of the truly decisive battles of world history. The American victory marked the turning of the tide of independence. What is the name of this battle? Okay, now what is the answer you two have decided upon? And talk right up into the microphone.
Battle of Yorktown?
No, I'm sorry. It's the Battle of Saratoga.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's the correct answer. So that means the big question next week will be worth $1,500. Well, you lost the big money, but you won how much? $200, $180 in cash? Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Bob Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life, presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth, two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget,
Next week, the big question will be worth $1,500.
Well, it's almost time for Bing Crosby, so good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a reminder. Meeting human needs is the objective of all Red Cross services. Respond willingly to the 1950 Red Cross Fund campaign. Remember, you're not giving to, but through the Red Cross. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.